Blog Talk Radio.
Now in its second edition, Carol Dean's popular book, The Art of Film Funding, has 12 new chapters to cover all areas of film financing and how to avoid expensive pitfalls. Learn how to start with an idea and end with a trailer. How to make an ask for money. Create your story structure and your trailer. Legal advice. Fair use. Successful crowdfunding, how to ask for music rights, and what insurance you can't shoot without. Available on Amazon under Carol Dean and at FromTheHeartProductions.com. Hi, and welcome to The Art of Film Funding. I'm your co-host, Claire Papin, along with Carol Dean, author of the best-selling book, The Art of Film Funding. Carol is also the founder and president of From the Heart Productions and the host of this show. Our guest, Catherine Subek, is a documentary filmmaker who has just had a successful theatrical run in 17 cities. A Girl and a Gun, her film, has received critical praise and recognition from numerous outlets, garnering much media attention due to recent news events. Catherine has appeared on HuffPost Live, NPR, ABC News, and several radio shows discussing guns and women's issues. And Carol, Catherine also won the Roy Dean Film Grant for A Girl and a Gun, didn't she?
Yes, she did, Claire. We're so honored to be a tiny part of this brilliant film. Thank you for coming, Catherine.
Thank you so much for having me, Claire and Carol. It's truly a treat.
Good. Well, we're just excited because this film is so timely. There's so many issues going on with guns in the news now. So tell us more about the film, please.
Yeah, the film is really, it's a women's issues film. It looks at how women relate to guns and gun culture, how we negotiate this kind of iconic image of the armed female. But really, it's centered around real stories of women who deal with guns, who own guns, who have dealt with them in their past, who's had very different experiences from kind of all walks of life. The women kind of come from all over the country. And I was very interested in that kind of multi-layered, multi-perspective view on guns and how they relate to women's issues.
Well, tell us about the Huffington Post interview. That might have been really wonderful for you and your film, was it?
It was really great. The format is very interesting, too, for what HuffPost Live is doing. They actually invited me into the studio in New York to speak to specifically to kind of gender issues and women's issues around guns. They also have three people join us in a Google chat, and two women who actually appeared in my film, and then another woman who they had brought on board as well. And it just created a really interesting conversation. You know, certainly we touched on points in the about the film. They showed several clips. They showed the trailer and just kind of talked about issues that were kind of circulating around the media then.
Right. And well, what was the outcome, though? How are people taking this? Are they pro-women with the guns or against it?
In terms of the film, when people have seen the film, I know, you know, people always say to me, you know, I came in to the theater or when I watched it online with one idea, and then it really opened me up to kind of thinking outside of my own personal perspective, outside my comfort zone. It really challenged me. I had just a friend the other day even said that, you know, I was pretty certain about how I felt about guns and gun ownership, and now I'm just completely confused and I'm still mulling it over, and something I kind of think about constantly. So it's not, I haven't met one person that's come out afterwards and said, oh, this film made me, you know, persuaded me to think, you know, I'm going to be pro-gun nor anti-gun, but it really kind of showed them the kind of multi-layered reasons and the complexities of the issues.
Oh, that's so marvelous. Because
yes, that was my intent always, or hope,
right.
Rather.
You were a hunter as a young girl, right?
And I was not, no. My first experience with guns was actually back in 2001, and I was up in Maine photographing on a different subject when I happened to meet a group of young girls that shot just for just casually, more for fun than competition, at their local range. And it was girls ages, 11 to like 14. And it's just something, it was my first time around guns. It was my first time around a gun club. It was, just arresting that kind of image of, this young woman holding these, and they were shooting large rifles. So that juxtaposition was fascinating to me. And it also, because it was so unexpected, it was something I'd never thought of, it really kind of invited me into a world that I wouldn't have necessarily explored or further before. So that was a great experience. I spent quite a bit of time photographing them. And then I actually came back to this New York City where I'm based and discovered there's a shooting range in Midtown, literally underground, and there is a women's club that meets there once a month. And there are so many women, so many people in New York City come from different parts of the country. And so the women there, the first evening that I went, just really surprised me in terms of their motivations, in terms of for just coming to that evening, in terms of their preconceptions about guns and what they hoped to get that evening. There was women that were terrified of guns and wanted to confront that fear. There was women who just kind of wanted to check off that bucket list of things to do in life. There was some women that, wanted to understand, should they ever confront a gun, how the tool actually works. So it was just a fascinating subject that just the subject really was illuminated to me that evening.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, I know that you worked on this for many years, but right at the end of the film, you got a very powerful interview. And I happen to say see this happen a lot, that sometimes people's films are sort of delayed because something is coming and it's not ready yet. You have to, the universe slows you down and then gives you this great reward for waiting. And you got that wonderful interview with Sarah McKinley. So tell us about that whole interview.
Yes, no, you're absolutely right. We were very near the end of our process and editing. I think we might have even been close to picture lock at that point when Sarah McKinley's story kind of broke in the headlines and in the news. Her story was she defended herself and her young baby against two attackers who broke down the door to her home. And she lived in the, in kind of rural Oklahoma. She had the 911 operator on the phone the entire time, but the police just couldn't get to her in time to protect her. So when her story broke, we actually, my editor and I, were working together and through a very funny story, actually, where my editor, through a distant relative, knew the weatherman at the local radio station. So we rang him up and were able to kind of navigate towards getting into contact with Sarah that way. when I spoke to Sarah on the phone, she was still at the point where she was, it was, 2 days, I believe, after the incident happened. It was still very fresh in her mind, and she was still processing quite a bit. And I think that, talking about it, even talking to the various news outlets that were approaching her was very much helping her process what had just happened. So I basically, when she gave me the green light to film, I went home. It was about 10 p.m. one night, and I went home, got my camera, went to the airport, and went to Oklahoma. And we spent the day filming together. And what I feel very fortunate was that she, just in the way that I was, in the way that I made the film, I really wanted the women to tell their stories. I didn't want my voiceover to come in and explain a story or to have a newscaster, explain the story. So for me, which was really great about her story, was that she was able to explain it herself and explain what had happened. And it was a jarring interview.
Oh, my. She was so scared. When she went outside, she didn't want to leave the house or the trailer. And when you got her outside, she was still shaking. And she had the baby in one hand and her gun in the other. She would not let go of that because it obviously meant that it saved both of their lives.
Absolutely. I mean, she was traumatized. Just the incident of having someone break into your home and come after you is traumatic enough, and then taking someone's life on top of that to defend yourself was also incredibly traumatic. So she was just dealing with so much, and she's quite young too. She was 18 at the time. So, but she really said she was, and in the film you see this, that she's still dealing with, A, the terror of having that incident happen to her, but also just the remorse even of having taken someone's life and knowing that there's a family there that is mourning their son's loss.
True, but from the story she told, that man would not stop until he had knocked that door down and gotten to her.
Yeah, they broke down her front her front door.
Yeah, he's a beautiful, she's a beautiful woman. And what would have happened to her child if that had, if she hadn't stopped him? So that was a wonderful interview for you. I think that was very important that we all see how in a dire situation that it saved her life and the baby's. We don't know what would have happened. There were two men, one at the front door and one at the back, and both of them were determined to get in.
Yep, and that's something I'm incredibly grateful for her story and to be able to include that in the film, because one thing that I grappled with over the years, and certainly in thinking conceptually about guns, using guns for self-defense or home defense, is this notion of perceived fear versus something that's happened to you, kind of an actual fear, and the ways in which people consider guns for self-protection when they have kind of fallen into those two categories. So to include that story was incredibly powerful for me.
Good. Right. Well, let's get to the film, because I think the making of the film is so important, and that's what you have so much to share with our filmmakers. So first of all, I really loved the fantastic photos that you use in the film. Did you find most of them yourself, or did you use an archivist, or what did you do? Tell us.
Yes, I would have absolutely loved to have hired an archivist. There are several people I spoke to. Unfortunately, my budget didn't allow it at the time. However, I did speak to people that I interviewed, such as R.L. Wilson, who had done this great book, Silk and Steel. There's Laura Browder, who appears in the film. And they were both wonderful resources. They had already done an enormous amount of work researching all these great historical images. I've been collecting images of armed women for years, so that was also great to kind of just access that little database that I had and locate them. The Library of Congress was another great outlet, as well as kind of local libraries or local archives. The Chicago Film Archives were incredibly helpful, and the Buffalo Bill Historical Center was quite helpful. So dealing with the local researchers in those various archives was great, because I could kind of tell them what I was looking for, and they could send me a variety of images and choose from there. But we had many, many, many different images. It was hard to narrow it down to what we showed in the film.
Well, did you have to pay for these? Once you found them yourself many times, did you get them free?
Sometimes I did. We did, a lot of times we negotiated festival rights at first, because you don't actually know how far, what kind of distribution your film is going to have. So it's always less expensive to negotiate all rights up front. But again, for me, in the position I was, working in a very low budget film, that it was just the decision that I could make at that time. And then afterwards, once we got our distribution deals, we would negotiate the step up from there.
Good. That's excellent. So you must have a lot of people that are suppliers that had a lot of impact on finishing the film. So tell us about these people.
I did. I mean, I would be remiss if I didn't mention very first my amazing crew, the people that kind of came on early on, believed in the subject, were interested in it, and just, worked in the film for so many years. There's Amanda Hughes, amazing editor on the film. We had a wonderful relationship. Jessica Wolfson, the producer. Andy Hollander, who scored the film. Our sound mixer, Steve Persky, and there's just numerous others. But and Nutmeg Post was an amazing Post House that really kind of jumped in and donated a few different things. So that was enormous for us. It was such a help. I don't know if we would have actually completed without all those amazing people on board.
Great, great. I'm glad to hear that. Well, tell us about your distribution.
Right, so distribution, it came pretty quickly. We premiered the film at the festival Doc NYC of November in 2012. We immediately began speaking to a few distributors and had a few offers on the table. We ultimately ended up signing with the majority of our rights to First Run Features, which is a wonderful, wonderful company. And they ended up partnering with Gravitas Ventures, based in LA, for digital rights, who ultimately ended up teaming with Warner Brothers for our day and date release, which means that we released in theaters and simultaneously with on-demand, cable on-demand platforms, IVOD platforms, and iTunes all at one time over the July 4th weekend. So it went really, really quickly. But it was very exciting. We also partnered with Collective iFilms based in Portland for a non-exclusive educational deal and community screenings deal. And so those I've had just really wonderful experience so far, and I'm very lucky. I was very – for me, when you spend so many years working on a film, your audience is who sticks by you, who will support you emotionally or financially or in any way. It just, for me, was so important to that the film was available so quickly that they could, it was finished, it premiered at a festival, and then just a few months later, they were able to kind of access it. And you didn't necessarily, yes, we did release in 17 cities, that was so exciting to release in theaters. However, you didn't necessarily have to live in one of those cities to also access it, which in hindsight, I'm so excited that that's how it happened. That anyone, didn't matter where you lived, could access it kind of at the same time. So I was really, really happy that that's the distribution strategy we ended up going with.
Yeah, that's what people want. They want it now in their home and when they ask for it. So
right, right.
May want it for a feature to go out to on Friday night. So having it available everywhere at once is brilliant. You're so right. But tell us how many years. I know I met you back in, what was it, 2005 or 6? So
the very beginning, yes.
You
so it was,
years
it was about
you
8 years. I'm sorry, it was about 8 years of working on the film. Again, you know, I explained that story earlier in 2001 when I met those young girls that I started photographing. I kind of look at the 2001 to 2005 when I was photographing the stories and I hadn't started working with video on this project, that was really kind of my research phase where I was kind of navigating this new territory, figuring out what stories were really compelling to me. So it's been quite a long time that I've been thinking about these issues, thinking about the story, thinking about the film.
It's just, yes, and it takes that. And thank heavens for your tenacity because you really have a great historical document there for what is going on in today's world with women and guns. It's excellent. But let's go back to the distribution.
Sure.
Because I know that you had two or three offers, and I just wondered, what did you use to determine who gave you the best offer? What things did you look at in the contracts?
Certainly. Well, certainly you always look at kind of your revenue shares, what your percentage of what you're going to get on various types of deals. I think more also incredibly important is the strategy of the distributor that you're speaking to really, for me, again, having this kind of film that would get out into the world very quickly was more appealing than, say, a distributor that had a kind of a longer track, such as, you know, building in a certain window for this type of distribution, building in a certain window of time for that distribution. So it would mean that my kind of average consumer would be able to see the film maybe not even until like a year later or even more. So and another huge consideration for me was how much effort did I want to put into it personally? And kind of there's so many different DIY strategies for distribution these days. But frankly, I had just run out of energy and run out of kind of interest in that part of it. It's not that I didn't want it to get into the world. I just didn't. I was ready to move on to a new project personally because of the time I had invested already in this film. So for me, that was the all of those kind of factors weighed in on my decision to partner with First Run Features.
Okay, that makes sense. Now, what about, you say you have an agreement on educational,
yes.
But did you keep the rights to be able to sell educational yourself too? Or
yeah,
did
I
they
did.
Have, you did. That's
I, so I do have the rights to sell educational through my site as well, and I can also arrange for community screenings. So even though we did give theatrical to First Run Features, I can still negotiate community screenings as they come up as well.
And do you plan on doing that at the moment? What's going
I
on?
I do. So for community screenings, we've just started kind of screening with universities, which I love. I feel like university kids aren't quite so jaded yet. You know, they don't necessarily come to a film with like a certain thesis that they've made up in their mind, a certain perspective. They're really, really open to it. So we've had some wonderful conversations following screenings at various universities. What I would really love to do, and I've been kind of baby stages of talking to a few different organizations, but team up with some women's organizations, some self-defense organizations, as well as conflict resolution organizations. And I think that they could be wonderful partners in kind of creating a dialogue and a screening and maybe invite other panelists and just really kind of digging into some of the issues that my film brings up in a different way.
Well done. Wouldn't that be interesting? That, yes, and it could be helpful to a lot of people who have been through trauma, have been attacked, and need to be in a group and discuss these issues and find out what their options are and what is it they personally need to be able to function properly, you know?
Absolutely. Some people, it's different for everyone.
Yes, it's different for everyone. I know in the film I remember someone saying that they didn't ever think they'd use the gun, and that wasn't really the intent. It was the empowerment of learning how to shoot a gun and knowing that you had one, and you just felt so much better about it.
For many people, just even understanding the object really kind of demystified it quite a bit, and it kind of stripped away some of their fears. And I thought that was one of the very first things I discovered in the evening that I spoke to you about with the Women's League here in New York. And I was just so amazed by that that idea, and that people would approach something that they were terrified of and just with the intent of understanding it.
Right. There was a time when I was taking martial arts, and it empowered me so much, Catherine, that I remember I was at my Chicago office one night. It was right downtown in the middle of downtown. I had a brownstone type of building there. And I remember walking on the street, and it was all these scary people on the street, and I felt so empowered, and I wasn't afraid. And when I got back to the apartment, I started to shake, thinking, are you crazy?
No, I think it's such an important conversation to bring up. I know self-defense is a huge part of my film, whether you choose to arm yourself or not. And it was one of the things I was so interested in when I first started exploring just idea how we negotiate ideas of self-defense. Do we ignore it? Do you live in an area where you just never think about it? You've never experienced something, so you just never choose to kind of explore a martial arts venue or anything like that. Or do you live in kind of this area on a daily basis with that, with a threat or something that you're terrified of? But one of the really interesting things was when I started filming at some self-defense classes or just going to some self-defense classes and understanding, you know, your very first, that everyone has, the way you can arm yourself in a self-defensive way is using your voice. And it was fascinating to me when I was speaking to some instructors, they're saying, you know, in regards to women specifically, many women can't raise their voice to a man, or you think that if you raise your voice, then you're just going to kind of exacerbate a situation. And that notion was just, it was fascinating to me and something I hadn't really, really thought about. You know, in many of our even kind of rough cut screenings, there were some women there that would be like, you know, I've never really considered self-defense or ideas of vulnerability or, you know, limits to my own power outside of like a specific self-defense class in a bigger way. So that was wonderful for me that the film was able to kind of foster that kind of discussion.
Yes, a lot of discussion in that is available from that film, I'll tell you. I really like that part. So did you sign with anyone for international distribution?
We did. We just recently signed with Films Transit International and working with Jan Rothkamp there. So it's currently touring around, and we just actually made our first sale in Israel. So that will be exciting.
Oh, my gosh. What that's an interesting place for the sale.
Right.
Yes, because those women are under a lot of threats on a daily basis, aren't they?
Well, they also all are required to perform military service. So most of the women who grow up in Israel and stay there through their teens have, you know, served in the Army and know how to handle a weapon.
That's great. Yes, that'll be beneficial to them. They'll really learn a lot from it. So tell us about funding the film. Did you get most of your money from people?
It's about half and half. I did. The people that supported my film over the years are amazing, and I wouldn't have been able to finish without them. I did receive support from the New York State Council from the Arts. They supported the film twice with two different grants, which was wonderful. And not only is it great because financially, but it gives you kind of that stamp of approval from an accredited organization. And we also did.
They are so nice there. Who did you work with?
Specifically at NISCA.
Uh-huh.
I worked with Don Palmer at the time.
He is so great. Is he still there?
I believe he's moved to D.C. I could be wrong about that, but he was wonderful and open to discussing things with you and you know, even would review when I didn't get it the first time. I had to apply several times, and so after my, like, a rejection, he reviewed my proposal with me and, you know, told me really about how the organization works, what their limitations are on the admin side in terms of receiving and reviewing all the proposals. So it was wonderful to kind of just understand the kind what their personal situation was in funding different projects, different artists.
Yes.
I also did a Kickstarter campaign, which was great, a ton of work, but that was a wonderful kind of, if you are successful, it's a great kind of chunk of money that you can then hire crew or put towards anything that you need in your process. So that was great.
Good, yeah, that is work. That's what I tell everybody going in, because you know, they have to be available 24/7, and you don't stop. You just get on that treadmill and keep going. But it does pay off. And that is really important to build your audience for the film. I think building those numbers is beneficial for the distribution. Didn't you find that you already had an audience?
It's essential, actually, in any distributor, traditional or a DIY distribution partner will tell you that your social media presence is essential. It's often quite overwhelming as a filmmaker when you're so involved in the creative process and you just are the fundraising process and all these other things to think of that as well. But like you say, if you can kind of leverage that fundraising as also an audience building type of scenario, then that is, it's wonderful for the film.
Yes, it definitely is. Well, did you have funding parties when you were raising money? Did you try that?
We did not. I thought about it, though. I thought that they would be fun. A lot of colleagues had done them successfully. For me, with this particular project, because I didn't take on a political stance, that I was very carefully wanted to make it a human story, I think that that actually was challenging in the fundraising stage, because a lot of, you know, individuals or organizations, more I would say organizations and groups, were nervous about that because they hadn't seen the final film. They didn't know what the final film would actually communicate. It's very easy to say that your intentions are a certain way, but then the ultimate product might not speak exactly that. So I think that that was a challenge for me, and I was, again, really, really grateful that Niska kind of jumped on board and took that risk and believed in my mission and my objectives.
Yes, they're a marvelous source for filmmakers. I really love them. Well, all right. Well, so you have done a wonderful job with getting your distribution and talking about outreach. So, but the next thing is, what have you found a film that you're interested in as the new film?
I do. I have a couple things going on. One project, I just finished a series for Glamour called Screw You Cancer about a young comedian who is based in New York City who found out she was genetically predisposed to getting breast cancer and elected to have a preventative double mastectomy. And I created a series for Glamour that is now online and available, kind of documenting her story through that process. I would like to continue filming with her and make that into a short, say, 40-minute doc. I think it's an incredibly compelling piece with amazing characters. I also have another personal project that I'm just about to begin. I don't want to speak too exact about it until it's actually got its feet, but it's a personal, it's a portrait story. It's about a man that's a particularly inspiring, interesting man that I have met who actually is local to where my hometown in Virginia. So I hope to start filming with him over the holiday.
Oh, how exciting. So you're going home for the holiday and that'll be the birth of a new film, possibly.
I hope so. It's very difficult for me just to go on vacation, so if I'm always filming, that would be great.
Oh, that sounds exciting. All right. So tell us more about the film. Are you selling the DVDs on the website?
No. First Run Features has exclusive for the consumer DVD, and it's available now on First Run Features website. We recently got a Netflix deal, so that's very exciting. The film will be available, I believe, in February for streaming through Netflix, which is wonderful. It's a great platform. I'm very excited about that. Through my website is obviously the educational DVD for sale, and soon will be kind of various products such as totes and T-shirts and posters and that kind of thing.
And on a normal basis, you work as a photographer or as a filmmaker? Tell us.
No, as a normal basis, I work as a director and producer. I still photograph quite a bit, but mostly personal projects and portraiture. But I don't work as a photographer. I work strictly in video now.
Strictly in video. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Give us your website and let everyone know how they can reach you.
Certainly. The film website is agirlandagunfilm.com. My personal website is katherinezubek.com. And my email, you can certainly email me with any questions, is catczu@gmail.com.
C-A-T-C-V-U.
C-Z-U, the first three letters of my first and last name, at Gmail.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Katherine. What a wonderful story you have. It's a large part of your life, years.
Thank you. And, Carol, your support over the years and the support of Roy Dean Grant is something that has just been amazing to me as well. And I just want to thank you again for all of for your belief in the project, for your help over the years.
Oh, you're so kind. I remember the day we met. I loved your project when I first received it in the grant because you applied several times before you won.
I did.
Love tenacity in filmmakers, and you get a gold star for that, see? And you went back to the state, the Niska grant three times, or whatever it took, you wouldn't give up. that's who you are, and that I honor in you. And it's just been a joy to work with you, and I hope that you will apply for the grant again with your new projects.
Oh, thank you. I absolutely will.
All right. So,
yes, thank
Claire,
you very much, Catherine.
Thank you, Claire.
Yeah. And Carol, wonderful, wonderful interview. And I think that there's been a lot of good information here that people can use. And
also,
of course, encouraging people to see your film as well.
Thank you very much. I very much appreciate
very
the time today.
Okay. All right. Well, be well, everyone.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
I want to remind our listeners that David Raiklin is a brilliant and talented award-winning musician who scores films and can compose music for a trio or for a full orchestra. David is a very good friend to the independent filmmaker and comes highly recommended by From the Heart Productions. If you need music to help tell your story, please contact him at davidraiklin.com. That's David, RAIKLEN.com. And Carol and I want to thank you for tuning in to The Art of Film Funding. Please visit our website at FromTheHeartProductions.com. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter. Good luck with your films, everyone.